The Tom Woods Show, episode 1817.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. The way to the inner circle of the Tom Woods Show is by drinking Press House Coffee, the official coffee of the Tom Woods Show. Its unique and delicious blends are absolutely irresistible. Take 20% off your first order when you use promo code WOODS at PressHouseCoffee.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here, talking today to Mark Victor, who is president of the Attorneys for Freedom law firm. Mark has been representing clients in serious state and federal criminal law matters for well over 25 years, and as a longtime freedom activist, he's regularly invited to speak to audiences on a wide variety of issues, including ending the drug war, the rights of gun owners, the free market, criminal justice issues, and so on. I want to talk to him today about his new Live and Let Live initiative, which we could really stand to have take root around the world. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Mark, you've been doing very important work for a long time. So before we get into the Live and Let Live material, take a minute to tell folks about your background and what you do these days.
Well, I'm originally from the Boston area, which makes me a Celtics, Patriots, Red Sox fan. And growing up, I always wanted to be actually a criminal defense lawyer. And so in order to pursue that dream, I came to Los Angeles and went to law school. Of course, this is after I moved to Arizona, so I'm a little out of order. Went from Boston area to Arizona, went to Arizona State, studied justice studies, left there, went to L.A., for law school, went to Southwestern. At Southwestern, I ran into Butler Schaefer. He was my professor for property. And some of your listeners may be familiar with Butler Schaefer. He's a fairly well-known libertarian thinker. He walked in, he had a shirt that said anarchist on it the day I met him in law school. And so he was quite provocative. And I was just sort of a conservative at the time. And he introduced me to what you might call libertarian ideas. And I fought him the whole way. I was in his office every day and arguing about things. And when the light bulb went off, and you know the light bulb goes off, I think you know what I'm talking about, Tom. When you understand the non-aggression principle and just simply apply it consistently across all of the issues, it just sort of makes sense. And the light bulb went off for me in Butler Schaefer's, really, in his office. I understood. I became a libertarian. People who met me at that time would say, Mark was on fire with ideas about freedom and peace. And so I came back to Phoenix. I was in the Marine Corps Reserves at the time. I had joined earlier in my life, right after high school, because I thought I might want to change the world and get into politics someday. I've always been sort of an activist type. And so I transferred my reserve unit to Phoenix and met a whole bunch of guys, fellow Marines, I'm still very good friends with today. And hooked up with sort of the libertarian crowd here in Phoenix, which is where I am now, and been an activist ever since. And my ideas have been evolving from sort of more what you might call sort of just a hardcore pro-freedom, no compromise type position, while keeping the same principle, evolving in a way that I think makes it more marketable and more palatable. Like, for example, the older, younger, I should say, Mark Victor probably would have led a conversation with, I'm for legalized methamphetamine. How do you feel about that? And, you know, the younger current day Mark Victor would normally lead with starting about principles and starting there and building to the idea of, you know, you own yourself and these types of things. So my firm has grown in popularity, and really my marketing plan has just been about pro-freedom. I've given speeches to pro-marijuana groups, pro-gay groups, pro-gun groups, groups of all types. And people have just, you know, the ideas of liberty have grown. So has the popularity of my firm. And people have been attracted to my firm because they want to work at a pro-freedom law firm. So eventually, I didn't want the firm to just be about me. So I changed the name to the Attorneys for Freedom. And we created something that we call the Freedom Pledge, which is sort of a fairly hardcore statement of principles that all of the lawyers at my firm have to sign so we can legitimately call ourselves the Attorneys for Freedom. And I've got, like I described to people, sort of a wild pack of wolves of pro-freedom lawyers foaming at the mouth, ready to go out there and fight battles. And we do a lot of criminal defense. We do civil rights. I don't think all cops are good or all cops are bad. I defend good cops and go after bad cops. And we do a lot of personal injury and civil litigation as well. And then since then, we've opened up an office in Hawaii. And I've made that my little project about turning one of the least free states with just over 1.3 million people, hopefully, into a state that's going to make the top of the list of the most free states. They're ready for change there, and they're suffering mightily as a result of programs based on the wrong principles.
I don't want to reveal the name of the person, but I do want to say, just so people understand my respect for you, that not that long ago, somebody I know was in some possible trouble, and I thought, let's see, who could maybe help this person? And I wrote to you, and you said, yeah, we can help this person. I thought, I had a feeling you could. So just so you all know, you know, I don't live near you, we don't hang out together, but I know of you, and we've interacted a bit, and I know about your work to the point where I would entrust my friends under your care. So I'll just say that so people get, you know, that you're the real thing. You're the real thing. I don't bring anything other than the real thing on the show here. And you're doing really great and important work.
Tom, I appreciate that. You know, there's no magic in life, right? It's all about being based on the right principles. I run my firm off of a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's a book about principle, and I feel strongly about that. This is why, you know, it brings me to the freedom position, because you got to start from the right principle. Otherwise, you're inconsistent, you're all over the place, and you really don't accomplish anything. So I appreciate the kind words. You know, we just fight hard for everybody and do the work. And sometimes we take cases for the freedom of it. This has really been popular over the last year. As you know, I've sued the governor of Hawaii a couple of times now, and we've gone after sort of proclamations in Arizona as well. And I've been involved in counseling with other lawyers who are going after the government for lockdowns and masks and all the various really violations of liberty that we've seen at the hands of, 50 little iron-fisted dictators. So we're in the midst of a bit of a fight. I think it's going to pass. And I think it's absolutely the best time, maybe ever, to bring something new to the table for change in our country and maybe the world.
Let's talk about what you're up to these days. Live and Let Live. What is this movement about?
Well, this is a movement that sort of evolved. I'll tell you what happened, Tom. I wrote an article, and I wanted it to be about one of the most controversial topics I could think about. And so I decided, let's do guns. And I entitled it A Principled Position on Guns. And of course, the principle was the non-aggression principle. And I sort of just applied the non-aggression principle in the best way I could to the gun issue. And in doing that, I was describing the principle. And I said, look, there's nothing special about what you call the principle. You could call it the golden rule, or you could call it live and let live, or you could call it this or that. And as people read the article, when they read Live and Let Live, that really resonated with them. They said, yeah, I'm for Live and Let Live. Is that what you're talking about? That makes sense to me. So what I did is I thought, well, this might be more effective if I just change the name to, Live and Let Live applied to guns. And I did. And this was very effective. People, you know, instead of having the wind maybe in your face when you're talking about the non-aggression principle, and people say, what the heck does that mean? When you say, I'm for live and let live, the wind is at your back. People really understand, and they want to agree with that. There's ways to say this in many different languages around the world already. So it sort of started there. And because I had been giving some speeches over the last few years that were entitled Libertarian Professionalism, I think we need to clean up our act as libertarians. We need to be more persuasive. Yes, I understand you have a right to live your life however you like and express yourself however you like, but there are ways to express yourself that are more persuasive to our fellow brother and sister human beings. And so I was running around giving this speech, and I thought, you know, maybe it's time to just start something new. And then since we thought about starting something new, let's start with a blank sheet of paper. The world doesn't have a peace movement. It's hard for me to imagine. There's no peace movement in the world. So we said, look, I've always seen freedom as a necessary prerequisite for peace. Peace is my goal. I'm a peace activist. But you can't get there if we're being aggressors towards each other. So you have to get there first. And also the other thing that struck me, especially with coronavirus, is we live in a global community now. somebody did something in China that affects us all over the world. So we can no longer afford to just be talking about a free society. We have to talk about a free world, because there are substantial threats that can be lodged against us, real threats from anywhere in the world. And there are many different existential threats coming soon that we need to deal with. So I think it's really time, and I feel some urgency for the reasonable people of the world. When I say reasonable people of the world, what I mean is reasonable people to me agree that aggression is wrong. That's really all we're saying, even as libertarians. Aggression should be illegal. It's wrong. Initiating force, fraud, or coercion, or creating a substantial threat of such things, this should be illegal. And that's really the role of government, to properly enforce what you might call the non-aggression principle, what I now call the live and let live principle. And so the other thing that's always bothered me a little bit about libertarian, I see this as a movement to change the law. It doesn't really incorporate any moral values. And of course, once you wade into this water, people will disagree. So I really wanted to bring in some values, because again, to get from freedom to peace, you got to bring in some new ideas besides just not being an aggressor. That'll get you to freedom, but we might still sort of verbally dislike each other and yell at each other. We could be perfect libertarians and be living in a free society, but we're certainly not at peace. Peace requires some things like open-mindedness and tolerance and voluntary kindness and civility and some rational thought and a commitment to truth and facts. And so those are the types of things that we now call the live and let live values. And the nice thing about pushing values is it gives me an opportunity to say, look, I'm not trying to change the law. I don't want the law to force you to be open-minded or to be voluntarily kind. These are in the area of sort of morality or ethics. This is different than the law. So it gives me an opportunity to make that very important point that there's a big difference between a legal rule and a moral rule. So by pushing some moral rules, I have that discussion with people. And then there's some other things that I think that we as libertarians, and by the way, I still consider myself a libertarian. I'm a friend of the libertarian movement. I just think we need to expand this to a global peace movement and do some things differently, right? We don't really need to argue about the size of government anymore. I mean, it's fun to have these arguments about should we support no government or small government or something bigger than that. The only thing I say about that at this point in my life is whatever size government you want, what I care about is that the government doesn't violate the rule, the live and let live principle, that government doesn't initiate force, fraud, or coercion. And I think, of course, very few or maybe none of the libertarian crowd would actually complain if everything the government did, including how it got its funding, did not violate the live and let live principle, or as we might say as libertarians, the non-aggression principle. So I don't argue that anymore. I also don't argue about capitalism or socialism. I say, you know, I don't care what economic system you want to participate in. As long as the rule isn't violated, I'm happy. So where does that leave us? Free market capitalism's fine. Crony capitalism violates the rule. Voluntary socialism, you know, the kibbutz in Israel, or if people want to get together and pool their money voluntarily, no problem. It's only the forced, the imposed idea of socialism that says, look, you have to be part of this. So I don't want to argue about the merits of socialism. What I say is don't violate the rule. If you want to run a socialist system, great. You don't get to force other people to be involved in it. And so these are the types of things that I would say are sort of slightly maybe different or in addition to ordinary libertarianism. And what's good about it, I think, right now is we're getting a lot of interest around the world. This really warmed my heart this past Sunday. I was on with a group from Africa. We had 13 really young, excited activists who are so pumped up about live and let live, and they want to do conferences in Africa. We've got some planned right now. We haven't even kicked off the movement, by the way. We're trying to do this the right way, so it really has a chance of actually working. I've been working on it for the past couple of years, and we're intending to kick it off in October of this year, 2021, with a conference in Hawaii, and then another conference in Phoenix. And then we're working on putting a conference in Singapore at the end of 2021. And then we're thinking Italy in April or May of 2022. And then also Sydney, Australia, and Auckland, New Zealand at the end of 2022. And then we're thinking also about Dubai, because I think we need to start getting our ideas out to obviously different parts of the world and the Middle East. And so the world, I think, is now ready for change, especially in our country, right? I mean, the Republicans have all but imploded. The Democrats are totally fractured, and people are just ready for something different. And I think if we, people who promote liberty and freedom and all of the things that we've talked about and that Cato promotes and lots of good organizations have been promoting, ISIL, which is now Liberty International, and these types of ideas, the world is ready, and reasonable people will agree with this if we can just present it in the right way. And I've also found it very interesting, people have been attracted to the Live and Let Live movement because of the moral values. They say, oh, you're pushing civility and open-mindedness and tolerance, especially the good people on the left who have goals that I agree with, right? The Bernie Sanders types who say, yes, I want to help the less fortunate. Yes, I think everybody should have health care and we should do all these wonderful things for people who are less fortunate than us. I agree with him. The only thing we disagree about is he wants to use force to make that happen, and I don't. I want to inspire our fellow humans to do the right thing for the right reasons. And I think they will. They already do. So that, if you lead even with the principles and say, hey, we got a movement that's pushing civility and open-mindedness and tolerance and voluntary kindness, people say, that sounds great. And if you go to the liveandletlive.org website, what you'll see there is a one-minute video. Because, of course, I'd like to give them a three-hour speech when they get there, but people much smarter than me have said, hey, Mark, you got a minute. So I hit him with a one-minute video. Then I hit him with a second one-minute video. And at that point, almost everybody says, boy, this sounds great. But what does it really mean when you get down into the weeds? So the third video is an eight-minute video that puts a lot of meat on the bones. And if they're still interested, I am currently in the process, getting closer to finishing a book that's written really from the standpoint of a 27-year criminal defense lawyer, somebody who thinks about these issues every day with a libertarian perspective. And I'm doing the best I can to lay it all out in great detail. I'm laying out the principle and why the principle makes sense, and this being sort of the least common denominator of morality, the idea that aggression is wrong, that initiating force against other people is wrong. Almost everybody will agree on that, regardless of where your moral tradition comes. And again, I don't want to argue about how you get there, whether it's a natural rights or contractarian or a religious view. It matters not how you get to the principle. So again, I chop that part off of things to argue about too. We start with the idea that people accept the principle and we move forward with that. And then I deal with some objections, things like, hey, Mark, this sounds great for individuals, but this isn't translatable to the government. And I deal with those types of objections. And then I sort of run from there into issues. I just apply the things that we libertarians have been doing forever. We just very consistently, very fairly apply the exact same principle to every single issue we can think of. And then I talk a little bit about how we could transition from where we are now. And of course, this is another thing libertarians love to argue about, right? How do we get out of Social Security? Okay, we all agree we should never have gone down this road to begin with, but how do we get out? Okay, we can disagree about this, and I think we shouldn't have big fights about this. We're in a mess, and how we get out of it is going to require some problems. It's going to be difficult. We got people who have paid in, and they have expectations about continuing to get paid, and people are getting taxed where the rule is being violated to fund them. The government has put us in this position. So I've laid out some ideas how we could transition, and then also some ideas how we could bring this idea without violating the rule to a global scale. How could we get the countries of the world to voluntarily sign on to treaties that basically say, look, we'll treat your citizens when they come to our country consistently with the live and let live principle, and you'll do the same for us. And maybe we'll set up a way to sort of adjudicate when somebody says, hey, you're treating me in violation of that. And essentially what I want to do is take the idea of federalism, how it was supposed to work, right? Minimum guarantees, the way it was envisioned to work, not the way it works now, and sort of expand that more to a global level. And this is something libertarians have rejected over many years, because of course, we're all afraid of having this sort of idea of a one world government and this and that. But we have to get something close where I can say somebody in Yemen is doing something that is creating a substantial risk, right? Maybe they're getting ready to turn a bunch of new synthesized viruses to start new plagues loose. I got to have some way to, in a peaceful way, to raise this, to make an allegation that somebody in Yemen is violating the rule so we can peacefully adjudicate that. Because as you know, technology continues to march forward and smaller numbers can do greater and greater harm. So we, the reasonable people of the world, have to urgently start adopting, whether you call it the non-aggression principle or the live and let live principle. We got to get together. We don't need everybody, but we need more people than we have now. And we need to get the rules calibrated, the legal rules calibrated around the live and let live principle. And so we got a lot of energy to try to make that happen. We're putting out a new podcast called the Peace Radicals Podcast. You can see the first few episodes at liveandletlive.org. We're working on a live and let live charter school. I don't know if it'll happen this year or not. Actually, I've got it teed up to happen this year. I don't know if we've got enough manpower and energy or woman power or whatever power to make this happen. So we're soliciting for volunteers. I need leaders. We've got groups in different countries, but you can never have enough people when you're trying to push a global peace movement. So I'm putting the call out. If you're tired of just having intellectual debates and you want to actually take some action and have a movement that does not compromise on any principle, if you call yourself the most radical anarcho-capitalist, I challenge you, find anything on the liveandletlive.org website that you think violates that principle, and please bring it to my attention. I'm easy to get a hold of. It's just Mark, M-A-R-C, at attorneysforfreedom.com.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Mark. Hey, everybody, let's take a quick minute to thank our sponsor, Press House Coffee, the official coffee of The Tom Woods Show, the coffee that turned old Tom Woods here into a coffee drinker. Now, first of all, I have a little life hack I want to share with you about Press House Coffee. You've heard me say that I love the blueberry muffin and the key lime pie blends. Of course, you can get the best cup of familiar diner-style coffee you've ever had from Press House, but I love that key lime pie in particular. And here's the hack. Drink it with the A2 creamer that you can buy at the store. Get the creamy vanilla kind, and it blends so well with that key lime pie coffee, you cannot believe how delicious it is. And remember, the Press House flavors aren't created by spraying some awful chemical on the coffee. They just blend carefully selected coffees from around the world and approximate these incredible flavors. Tom Woods Show listeners are already raving about it. Get 20% off your first order and a chance to win a year of free coffee when you use promo code Woods at PressHouseCoffee.com. That's 20% off your first order and a chance to win a year of free coffee when you use promo code Woods at PressHouseCoffee.com. Now, let me raise maybe a devil's advocate kind of response. Obviously, nothing would make me happier than to see the world adopt the non-aggression principle tomorrow. My fear is that most people don't seem to live according to abstract principles. I mean, we think, geez, these politicians, they don't seem to have any principles because their constituents don't have any principles. It's not that people are going around saying, I wish that politician had more principles. It's more, I wish he would favor me more. I wish he would give me more money. I wish he would hobble my competitors. I don't see people going around craving universal, general, abstract principles. I don't see that. So short of that, the next best thing to me in terms of live and let live would be, okay, I'm not going to convince you of the non-aggression principle. There's a good chance that I won't convince you of it. But I'd like to be able to live according to it. So that's my form of live and let live. You live over there according to whatever crazy principle you want, and you leave me alone to live my life according to these principles. I would consider that to be the next best thing rather than to try to convince everybody in Saudi Arabia that they've got the wrong social order and they need the non-aggression principle.
Yeah, well, of course, Tom, it may be the next best thing, and I tend to agree it's a lot better than we've got now, but it's not going to be good enough going forward. It's been good enough in the past, but going forward, you know, we trade globally, we travel globally, companies are in different countries now. It's so easy for somebody in another part of the world to actually violate the principle, right? I think the example we're all living through now is somebody in China did something, and we're suffering now from a global, whatever you think about it, there is a coronavirus and it's out there and it is killing some people. You know, the scope of it and the reaction to it are all different questions. And so I think that that's not going to be good enough going forward. And then your first point, I think I differ with you on that point. People don't think about it in terms of principle. And I sort of hate to generalize everybody here because I've got many clients I've represented over the years. They reject the non-aggression principle. They're happy to be aggressors. But most people aren't. I think the vast majority of people that you meet, when you go to somebody's house and you talk to them, we have sort of this understood notion that there's a principle there. Minimally, they're not going to aggress against me. Even animals understand this, right? I mean, if you start kicking the dog, eventually he gets upset and he'll snap at you. Even dogs sort of understand. All living things act in their own self-interest. And so I think that the average person on an individual level does indeed understand that aggression is wrong. The only thing we got to do is just break that out for them and tell them, look, it's not only is it wrong when we meet at Starbucks, that's wrong for you to punch me in the face. Not only was it wrong when we went to kindergarten and the teacher said, look, I got two rules. Keep your hands to yourself and don't take the other kids' toys without their permission. Like, they understand that. What we need to explain to them is this is still a good rule. It's always been a good rule. And let's just apply it consistently. Let's really adopt it. Now, some people will say, look, principle doesn't excite me. What might excite them is outcome, right? Because we can say, look, if we do adhere to this, and all we really do is just calibrate the law, because we're not pushing utopia here. Not everybody is going to ever adhere to this. We want to calibrate the law in this direction. But if we do, we can dramatically raise standards of living. We can increase human happiness while decreasing human suffering. And that's a good reason all by itself. So there are moral arguments for the reasons to sort of adopt the principle, but there's also practical arguments. It works better than anything else. It raises standards of living. It lets you both define and pursue your happiness in any way you want. And I would say, Tom, we have to get this done. We don't have an option. We can't just say, look, we're going to live in our little bubble over here. You guys do whatever you want over there. What will we do when technology advances to the point where it's easy for anybody to get a nuclear weapon who wants one? Like every other piece of weaponized technology that has arisen, eventually everybody's going to get it. What will we do when people can, in their garage over a weekend, make nuclear bombs and be able to launch them? It's not enough to say, hey, if you're in Saudi Arabia, we don't care what you're doing over there. There are many things they can do that violate the non-aggression principle or the live and let live principle on a very easy scale. Not just that, but what about artificial intelligence? What if it's being developed right now recklessly such that it's going to do who knows what types of unforeseeable harms around the world to computer systems? So as much as I would love to say, look, let's just go back and concentrate on a free society, we've evolved past that. We no longer have the luxury to say, well, let's ignore the rest of the world and just focus on our little area here.
What difficulties, though, do you anticipate in trying to implement this? Because I can think of a whole bunch.
Well, I think the biggest difficulty, maybe the only difficulty we have, and it's a substantial difficulty, is just getting the message across. Because you know, and your listeners know, that if everybody understood exactly what we are saying, whether we're saying it in the language of the non-aggression principle, or whether we're saying it in the language of live and let live principle, or we're just simply saying, do unto others how you would have them do unto you, or the golden rule, or some other version, there are many other ways to say it. I mean, even in Hawaii, they talk about aloha spirit. If we just communicated what we're talking about, really in the most simple forms, it's, look, we think the law ought to prohibit aggression for all individuals, all groups, all organizations, and all governments. If they got that simple message across, they would accept it because it makes sense. That's the reason why libertarians are kept out of the debates, right? Because we have a simple, easy, very effective answer. And if you're a Republican or a Democrat and you're coming from a completely unprincipled stand, you're in no position to debate a libertarian on these issues. We've seen that over and over again. So we have failed at getting our rather simple message across because we do things like the young Mark Victor used to do. We lead with, hey, I think methamphetamine should be legal. Those types of statements.
Yeah, I hear you. But let me jump in here. But because I've been frustrated, as I'm sure you have, at how little progress we've made. We feel like we have the greatest message in the world. Yep. We should have made more progress with it. And so sometimes we rebuke ourselves. We haven't presented it the right way, or people sometimes, because of their education, they get only one point of view. And all of that is true. I don't deny that. But now that we've lived through this COVID thing, and for 10 months, I've watched people adopt the most anti-scientific, anti-human irrationality, destructive irrationality, even though all the information they need to refute that is available to them with one mouse click. That makes me think, okay, wait a minute, now I don't feel so bad. Now I get why I haven't been successful. I'm dealing with people like this. Does this not discourage you?
Well, it actually gets to a different problem that I think is unrelated, but very, very serious problem, is that we just simply are having a problem right now converging on facts. These are people who are not saying, you know, I want to reject science at all. These are people who have a different view of what's going on. Like, you know, Tom, if you turn on CNN or MSNBC and you just watch for a little while, you'll be ready to slit your wrists, right? The roof is on fire. We're all going to die from COVID-19 or from whatever the next problem is. I mean, these are sort of sensationalized type stories, and they give a certain narrative. If you get your news from Facebook, you're in an echo chamber, right? And it depends on which echo chamber you're in. If you're on the Fox team, you know, the election is rigged and this and that, and you have a certain different narrative about the world. So I think nobody or very few people are outside enjoying wearing masks and doing the things we're doing and social distancing. They're not doing that because they enjoy it. They're doing that because they've been fed a certain set of facts. And I don't have a good solution. I think this is a really serious problem. And this is why I say commitment to facts is part of the Live and Let Live movement. We've got to somehow figure out a way to figure out what is true about the world. And I'm not sure we have that right now. And I think this is an ever-increasing problem, because we truly do have good people who are watching CNN and good people who are watching Fox, but they're emanating from completely different sets of facts. And it's very difficult to determine. I mean, sure, you can click on a Cato website and look at presentations there, but who has time to dig through the studies and things like that? And we're in situations where you really need to be an expert to understand this stuff. Take global warming, the same type of thing. The people who, many people, I mean, of course, there might be a segment who say, yes, I think global warming is a problem, because they want to sort of advance some liberal agenda. But I think the most people who are on that side believe certain facts about the world and our environment, and people who are on the other side believe a different set of facts. If you told me, and this is why I think I like talking to lawyers about this, because we use hypotheticals, right? We say, assume the facts are like this. Then we can analyze the problem. And then we can say, assume the facts are like that. And then we can analyze the problem. So this is a substantial problem. I don't know that we need to solve that problem to merely convince people that aggression is wrong and should be outlawed. So I think we could still accomplish our goal. We may still have completely different narratives. The nice thing about that is, you know, as I like to say, if you could imagine two people who disagreed on everything about the world, every possible thing two people could disagree on, the one thing that they ought to be able to agree on, if indeed they are reasonable, is how about this? You don't hit me over the head and I won't hit you over the head. That should be their very first point of agreement. So what we're pushing should be the easiest thing for people who disagree on facts and philosophy and religious views and everything else about the world to actually agree on. That's why I'm optimistic about getting this done, if we can get the message across.
Fair enough. So once again, the website, liveandletlive.org. Is there a liveandletlive.com? Let's just point this out so that people don't make a mistake. Let's make this up.
There is a liveandletlive.com. And actually, I started with that and thinking that maybe we should park it there. And whoever owns it, there's nothing there. They want a whole bunch of money for it. And I've already put a bunch of my personal funds to try to get Live and Let Live going. So I decided to park it at .org. And I'm not worried about it. People will find where we are. This thing isn't going to fail to grow because we're at .org instead of .com. Maybe someday we'll pick up .com. It's going to grow because we're going to do a good job spreading the word, and we're going to convince people in the most reasonable, marketable, palatable, sort of understandable way it can be done. And then for people who are curious, just go check it out. Check out the first two videos. I'd love to get feedback from people. There's plenty of time to change things around, and I'm always open-minded to different ways. We've got FAQs on there, just sort of easy snippets to answers, and take a look at how we're presenting the movement, how we're dealing with hard issues, how we're answering questions. And if you have suggestions, if you'd like to contribute, maybe put an article up that speaks in terms of live and let live, happy to have you. We need as much help as we can possibly get getting this thing going.
All right. So that's the website, liveandletlive.org. So remember, .org is where you want to go. I'll link to it on the show notes page. And Mark welcomes feedback. And of course, you can comment on the show notes page as well. Thanks, Mark, and best of luck.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you this morning.
All right, folks, that's our episode for today. Tomorrow, the beloved Gene Epstein returns to the Tom Woods Show. You're not going to want to miss that. It's always great to hear from old Gene Epstein. So tune in tomorrow. See you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.